Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan
with insurancebroker.ie
on News Talk.
Yes, we're making babies with the master of the National Maternity Hospital. Professor Shane Higgins is with me in studio today. Shane, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Andrea. Good, thanks.
087 1400 106. That's the WhatsApp number. If you have a maternity or fertility related question for Shane today, we want to chat about fetal movement. What is it and how important is it?
Well, it's hugely important, and it is a way in which mum can monitor the well-being of her baby when she's not sitting in front of a healthcare provider who's doing a scan or a trace. So fetal movement is essentially exactly what it says. It's the baby bumping into your uterus. And it's not that the baby's, you don't feel the baby moving, you feel the baby bumping into you. And for patients who are pregnant for the first time, it's something that perhaps starts around week 20 to 24. For patients who've been pregnant before, it can happen earlier. But once you get to the third trimester, 28 weeks and beyond, it becomes a very important way in which mum can tell that all is well with the baby. If she recognises a pattern to the movement, and often women will recognise a pattern, then from one day to the next, she monitors that pattern. Don't compare it to another pregnancy. Don't compare it to a friend or relative. It's unique to every pregnancy. But by 28 weeks or so, you should have now come to appreciate what might be eventually a unique pattern for your pregnancy, but you monitor that from one day to the next. And it's if you see a reduction in the movement, that's when you should come into your hospital.
So what's happening internally?
So what's happening is the baby moves. So babies do what's referred to as a sleep activity cycle. So they're either resting and asleep, or they're awake and moving. And typically they occur every 20 to 40 minutes. They rotate on that cycle. And when the baby's awake, it's actually moving its limbs, it's rolling its body, it's somersaulting. But it's that movement that you appreciate when the baby bumps into your uterus that you can then use as a platform to assess the well-being of your baby. And if it's continuing to move day on day, as you've come to expect, acknowledging that as the baby gets bigger and stronger, the movements will become greater and more obvious. But you'll gradually notice that from week to week and fortnight to fortnight. But it's the baby not moving on a day when you expect it. And if you come in from work and you think, well, the baby hasn't moved as much today, it may simply be you've been busy and preoccupied. But if you sit down, give yourself a couple of hours of an opportunity to observe, and if you're not reassured at the end of that, that's when you really should come into the hospital, because it may be, and very rarely, but maybe the baby is not tolerating life in the utero.
Now, to contradict myself, I know you just said you can't compare yourself to other people, but what's the typical, I suppose, feeling or response that people say to you when they talk about what this feels like? I'm trying to think, what should people look out for, effectively?
Okay, so that's a great question. And that's why I say don't compare. So I have patients who've come in, they've had three babies before, and they say, this is a much quieter baby. I said, yeah, but is it moving as much as it was yesterday and the day before? And if the answer to that is yes, then that's fine. So that's what, you know, there's no normal. There's no need to chart or record anything. If you're getting ready for bed at night and you can say to yourself, I had plenty of movement today, that's all you need to say.
Should you monitor it, measure it?
No, other than if you come in from work in the evening, or if you feel that there's been a really quiet period in the course of the day, 3 or 4 hours where you've not felt an awful lot, sit down, put your feet up, observe the movement, have something to eat or drink if that's what you'd normally do at that time of the day. And if at the end of that period of observation you're reassured and say, yeah, look, I was just busy, that's fine, carry on. If not, it's so important that patients don't feel like they're wasting people's time if they're coming to a hospital with reduced fetal movement. It is so important that they do.
That they do. Okay. And are there any steps you yourself, Shane, can take, or sorry, that mums can take to increase the movement? Or well, apart from...
Patients will often say that if they're sitting at home and they're a little bit concerned about the movement, they can take a drink of cold water or a cold fluid of some description, and it'll often prompt the baby to move in response to that. But that's fine as a one-off. If that's what you have to do every time you want the baby to move, that is absolutely not fine, and you should come in, because it's the placenta we're worried about. If the baby's moving plenty, it means the placenta is working and meeting its needs. If the baby suddenly starts to diminish its movements, or you're concerned about the movements, it may well be that there's a problem with the placenta and you need to come in.
So the message really for people today is don't feel that you're bothering the clinicians. This is something you need to go in about.
And patients will sometimes say to me, listen, it was really quiet last night, but I just went to bed and slept. My mantra to patients is never go to bed if you're concerned about the baby's movements.
Simple as that. Okay. And when you say come in, go to ED or go to your maternity?
Well, absolutely go to your maternity. And the National Maternity Hospital is a fully staffed 24/7 emergency department for women's health issues. So you can go in there, you'll get a trace done, you'll get a scan done, you'll be seen by midwives and doctors, and they'll reassure you that everything's fine, as it is 99% of the time. And you go home reassured, and then you're not sitting at home worried unnecessarily. You come in, get it sorted, go home.
Yeah, okay. Now, question for Dr. Higgins. If I'm going consultant-led and want to have, is it VBAC, VBAC for my second baby?
Yeah.
Would you advise looking for a consultant who specialises in this? First of all, what is it?
Well, VBAC is a vaginal birth after caesarean. That's what the VBAC stands for. So it's for a patient who's had a previous caesarean section. And no, you don't need to specifically find a consultant. In fact, you don't need to even go consultant-led, or I'm assuming the patient means privately for that. You don't need to do that. All hospitals, all maternity hospitals will offer patients who are deemed suitable the opportunity to have a vaginal birth. And patients who choose that option will typically have about a 60 to 70% success rate. There are rules of engagement, as I like to say. So you won't be induced, you won't get oxytocin in labour for the most part. And I say that about my own practice and pretty much the hospital's practice. But you can, if you labour spontaneously, you've got a good chance of a vaginal birth. So absolutely, but you don't need to find any specific consultant. Everyone is capable of looking after a patient who wishes to have a VBAC. And you don't need to go privately either.
You don't need to go private. Listeners 36, Shane, currently breastfeeding her 4-month-old first baby. We're keen to have a small age gap between baby number two, given my age. I do have PCOS. We needed an assisted cycle to try to conceive the first. When should I stop breastfeeding to have the best chance of success?
Good question. Let me think about that for 2 seconds. So breastfeeding isn't a very effective contraceptive. Let's be clear about that. So most obstetricians and midwives will have seen patients who come back 3 months after having a baby pregnant, thinking that they're safe if they breastfeed. Sooner or later, and probably before you get your first period, you're going to ovulate. So you're going to be fertile before you menstruate. So you just need to be using contraceptives at the moment until you decide now is the time to start again. I would always say to patients, give it at least 6 months after a vaginal birth. And if you did need assisted conception in the previous pregnancy, fertility units might often say to wait 12 months after the birth of a baby, but somewhere between 6 and 12 months, certainly 6 months, you can start trying to conceive spontaneously. And if you're successful, fantastic. And if not, then by the time you get to 12 months after the birth of the baby, you can go to your healthcare provider for the assisted conception. But I would say if you're going to try in earnest, then stop breastfeeding at about 6 months, and your periods should return if they haven't already, and you'll be ovulating.
But your message there, am I right in saying, or to clarify, is that breastfeeding won't stop you getting pregnant?
No. It will. The closer you are to the birth, the more effective it is. But the longer you are, and nobody can tell you, and it will vary from patient to patient. I mean, you take 100 women, they'll all have a different return date of their periods.
087 1400 106 is the WhatsApp number if you have a question for the Master of the National Maternity Hospital, Shane Higgins. Listeners looking for your thoughts on whether reflexology will help to induce labour.
Well, there's no evidence to suggest reflexology or any other alternative medicine will help. I know a lot of patients who get acupuncture who think that it might have helped them start off in labour. You know, there's a lot out there on the things that might assist you to go into spontaneous labour. Raspberry leaf tea, various foodstuffs, reflexology, acupuncture. There's no evidence base for it. But, you know, traditional Chinese medicine or alternative medicine has been around for thousands of years. There must be some substance to it. So it'll do no harm. Can't say for sure it'll work.
Can't say for sure it'll work. I have a history of high platelets from before I became pregnant. Should I be prescribed low-dose aspirin by my doctor or gynaecologist?
It depends, but probably not. The bigger maternity hospitals will have what's called an obstetric hematologist on their staff. We have one at our hospital. So if there's a hematological issue, you can be referred there and they will make that decision quite early on.
Okay. Listener says, I'm currently 10 weeks postpartum and my hormones are still very imbalanced. When will they regulate?
Well, that varies, but I would certainly, you know, it depends on what the patient is really complaining of. I mean, rarely you will have a problem with ovarian function after the birth of a baby. So give it another couple of months to see if they all regulate. you know, add to that mix, are your periods back? Are you ovulating again? If those sort of things are there, then everything else should settle down with time. But if the patient, for example, is experiencing quite significant menopausal symptoms, then it would be worthwhile, if they're 10 weeks, wait till 12, 14, 16, go to your GP if things haven't settled, get a blood test to make sure that the axis that controls ovarian function, which is the hypothalamus, the pituitary and the ovarian axis, is working by doing a relatively simple blood test.
Okay. Listeners wondering about PGP, pelvic girdle pain. Any suggests?
Pelvic girdle pain.
Girdle pain. What did I say? Any suggestions how reflexology can, about reflexology, can you explain why it's important to sleep or lie on the left?
So it's not that it's important to sleep on the left or the right. And that's slightly different to pelvic girdle pain. So a lot of patients will experience some pelvic girdle pain, whether it's their hips or their inguinal ligaments or their symphysis pubis, which is the joint between the two pubic bones in the front, just in front of the bladder, or it's the low back. That's all the pelvic girdle. And a lot of patients will complain of pain and discomfort. Seeing a physiotherapist is very much worthwhile, particularly one who has a women's health interest. That's the port of call for that. And again, get referred to your local hospital physio department, or if there's a big waiting list, as there might sometimes be, go and see somebody privately. They may give you a belt or a pelvic support belt, which will help with that. But the sleep issue is not that you want to sleep on your left or your right. You shouldn't be sleeping on your back from about 20 weeks onwards, because that can compress the pregnant uterus as it gets bigger, can compress the inferior vena cava, which is the main blood vessel that returns blood from the lower half of your body. And therefore, by compressing that, you kind of get diminished blood return to the heart, diminished cardiac outputs, and you feel quite unwell. You feel dizzy, lightheaded, as if you're going to faint. So not sleeping on your back will avoid that. But you can sleep on your left or your right, really, because sleeping on one side continuously will inevitably cause you quite significant hip pain.
Yeah, okay. Well, glad you clarified that for us. Professor Shane Higgins, Master of the National Maternity Hospital. Shane will be back next Wednesday at 12:40. If you've questions actually that you sent in, they'll be sent in to us. We will get to them at a later stage. We'll keep them on file for the next time Shane's here.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.